live from around the world, it's time for Peter Greenberg Worldwide with America's number one frontline travel news journalist. Get on the phone now and call 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. And now, the man who travels over 400,000 miles each year, the travel detective, Peter Greenberg.
And welcome aboard another edition of Peter Greenberg Worldwide on this last weekend in January. Hard to believe, but of course, January's had 5 weekends. Hard to believe that, too. But, you know, almost every one of them, snow. If you're in the East Coast listening to the show, you know exactly what you're going through. I do, too. Lots of snow. I think it snowed 12 times since December. Lots of fun for the airlines. Lots of fun for the airports. It just doesn't pay to leave sometimes. But we leave all the time. We crisscross the country. We crisscross the world. Last week, we were coming to you from the inaugural cruise of the Disney Dream out there in the off the coast of the Bahamas. And, well, it's another opening. We crisscrossed the country again. I couldn't come through the airport I wanted to because it was closed for snow. We rerouted, but we're here anyway. Get out your masks, boys and girls. 18 degrees, 32 minutes north, 68 degrees, 22 minutes west. We're coming to you from the opening. See, with two openings in a row, inaugural cruise of the Disney Dream, and now the opening of the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Punta Cana in the Dominican Republic. Taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER, and if you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill. Email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem. We'll solve it right here on the air. I'm always having a great time when I come to the Dominican Republic, and we're also going to talk about its neighbor a little bit later in the show, because you know we always talk about them every week on this show, and that's Haiti and what they're still going through and how you can help. Lots of guests on our show today that can weigh in on this, including our good pal Scott McCartney from the Wall Street Journal and a number of other people who are doing some really important work not too many miles from here. Of course, you know about the winter storms. No big news bulletin there. We just hope it's going to get cleaner in terms of snow very soon. Some other items in the news we have to talk about. A terrible explosion at Russia's biggest airport. Suicide bomber killing 35. A reminder to us of how airport security only works sometimes. And if somebody's bound and determined to take their own life, there's not a whole lot you're going to be able to do to stop them. And the suicide bomber killing 35 people at Russia's busiest airport earlier this week. Sad, sad story, and one we will be continuing to monitor. And by the way, speaking of security, to give you an idea of how we completely shift into gear when that happens, we've announced this week, I love it, that our color-coded threat system is going to be replaced. Oh, really? Wow. I was hoping they might go to, it's always threat yellow or threat orange. We haven't had a red in a long time. I was kind of hoping before they got rid of it, they'd go to chartreuse. Maybe lavender. Or maybe a kind of a very subtle pastel. How many people listening to the show, how many of you who travel, pay attention to that? Answer, how about zero? What does it mean to you? I mean, I'm worried enough about just being color coordinated when I get dressed in the morning. What does a color coded threat system mean? It means it's ineffective. So what are they going to do now? Well, they're going to get rid of it in April. And now what are they going to replace it with? Well, they don't know yet. They're going to unveil it soon. So maybe they'll do a fashion show on a runway. You know what? I have a color coded system. What is the color of common sense? Let's do that color coded system. Common sense. Let me give you an example. If it's a hot August afternoon and I show up to check in for my flight and I'm going through security wearing 5 overcoats, a muffler, galoshes, and a sweater, you know what? I don't care what I look like in terms of the magnetometer. You might want to look at me. You might want to talk to me. You might want to have a conversation with me because it doesn't work. Conversely, if it's the middle of winter and I show up with a t-shirt, cutoffs, and no overcoat, and no checked bags, and I'm flying from Africa to Detroit, you know what? The color code there is stupid if you don't ask me some questions. Anyway, that's what's going on with that item here. So, terrible explosion in Russia, and it coincides with us getting rid of the color-coded threat system. So be that as it may. Let's go right to the phones. We got that on the phone from Syracuse. I know it's cold up there. Are you freezing?
Yeah, it's about 28 degrees here. Thanks for taking my call.
I spent 5 years in Madison, Wisconsin. 28 degrees is beach weather.
Well, I was stationed in Grand Forks, North Dakota, and it got down to 40 below zero there.
Okay, you got me on that one. Although I will tell you this, I learned a very important lesson when I was in Madison, Wisconsin many, many years ago. It was minus 28 one morning, and I was late for class. I was going to school, and I raced out of the shower, jumped into my clothes, and I was running to class, and all I could hear was crunch, crunch, crunch. I didn't know what it was. It was my hair falling off.
Oh, jeez.
That's how cold it was. Wow. And you know what happened after that? I had to wear one of those Vince Lombardi stocking hats for a while because it was so embarrassing. Anyway, right. Thad, you had a question for me.
Yeah, I went on a cruise last September with my sister and brother-in-law, and I had to bunk with them because I couldn't find anybody to go with me. And but I enjoyed the cruise. I had a great time. It was Carnival Fantasy. And I want to go on another cruise, but I'm having a hard time finding a singles cruise. You know, I saw on your website that there's a seniors singles cruise. I'm 60.
No, there's more than that. But let's get down to the bottom line here. You're going single because it's a personality issue with you? I'm just kidding.
No, it's not that. I can't find anybody to go. Some people I talk to say, oh, there's too much water for me out there. I can't drink all that water. And then other people are kind of flaky. I can't depend on them. You put down your deposit and then.
Listen, whatever excuse works for you, but I'm going to help you out. Okay.
Okay. Good.
Here's the bottom line. It started out last year, the Norwegian Epic, their brand new mega ship. They actually designed the ship with 128 cabins designed especially for guys like you, single cabins, and priced that way so you're not hit with that dreaded solo supplement. It's one of the biggest ripoffs in the cruise industry where you have to pay double to have a single cabin.
Right.
So they got 128 cabins on the Epic. It's been a huge success. And as a result of that, Royal Caribbean just announced this week they're going to start offering ships with single cabins. Well, duh. How many people out there in the same boat, no pun intended, as you are,
right,
who really want to go out on a cruise but don't necessarily have somebody to go with them?
Right.
And you don't have to be, and you don't have to be a senior citizen to qualify for the discount here. All right.
Okay.
So check with NCL. You can also check out with some of the river cruises, which is a different kind of cruise experience than what you're experiencing on the Carnival. I mean, you know, Isaac's not your bartender on that ship, but bottom line is they also have single cabins. I would stick with NCL at this point because they really perfected it. I've seen those single cabins on the Epic. We just did a shoot over there on one of those ships. We did a shoot on the Epic, and I have to tell you, they did a really good job. You'll like it a lot.
Okay, thanks a lot. Norwegian...
It's NCL, Norwegian Cruise Lines, and the ship is the Epic. And then by next year, RCCL will come out with single cabins on their ships as well. All right, get some warm weather gear on because you're going to go cruising. Thad, thanks for calling up from Syracuse, New York. When we come back, we'll be joined by our good friend Scott McCartney from the Wall Street Journal. What's the best base day to buy a ticket? We're going to tell you when we come back from the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Punta Cana, Dominican Republic. Back right after this.
The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now, so call us at 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by
MedJet Assist. If you're injured or hospitalized while traveling, MedJet Assist will arrange medical transportation directly to the hospital of your choice. Travel safely and be smart. Get MedJet Assist. Take trips, not chances.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
18 minutes after the hour, coming to you on this last weekend in January from the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Punta Cana, opening up this week. Amazing place because it's the first all-inclusive Hard Rock Hotel, the first Hard Rock Hotel in the Caribbean. Catch this, nearly 1,800 rooms. That's huge. But talk about acreage. We'll talk about that a little bit later. But quite the party they're throwing on. But speaking of parties, my show wouldn't be a complete party without our next guest because he's the travel editor of the Wall Street Journal, a regular on our show. There is so much to talk about today with our good pal, Scott McCartney. Hey, Scott.
Hey, Peter. How are you?
I'm doing okay, and lots of stuff to talk to you about. I mean, you had a great story this week in the Wall Street Journal about, you know, the best day not to buy a ticket, the best day to buy a ticket. I've been yelling and screaming for years it's Tuesday night or Wednesday, and I guess I was sort of right, huh?
I think you're absolutely right. But the thing that really surprised me when we crunched a bunch of numbers and talked to a lot of people was how much more expensive the weekends are. And, you know, I felt kind of foolish. I mean, I book a lot of tickets for family and all, and sit down on the weekend and do my searching and see a price and buy it. And I've been, for all these years, probably paying too much.
You know, I've seen some price differentials that are crazy. I looked on the weekend last weekend to buy a ticket, and then I booked, and then I said, God, that seems a little expensive. So I waited till Tuesday, went to the exact same itinerary on the exact same website. It had gone down $180.
Yeah, in fact, I got an email today from a woman who had read the story and waited and found that she ended up booking tickets to Europe for a family of four for $2,000 less than she almost paid last weekend.
I'll give you another one I just discovered today. I need to get to Dallas, Texas in the middle of February for one day. I went on the websites, and that included not just the individual airline websites. I went on kayak.com, and a nonstop flight. I hope you're fastening your seatbelt because it's where you live, buddy. It's Dallas. You ready?
Oh, I live
from New York, from LaGuardia to Dallas on a Wednesday, $2,000 round trip.
Yeah. That's actually a very significant thing. And back in the late 90s when travel just got so expensive, business travel, the $2,000 ticket to New York was sort of the benchmark for me. And you know, that was when I just thought airfares are just getting outrageous. Low-fare competitors had plenty of room to come in and undercut. And then, you know, everything, the industry really turned upside down, starting with 2001, but really the recession before then. But now we're getting back to the $2,000 airfare, and I really think it's a significant turning point. Fares are going to be a lot more expensive this year, and you just found the canary in the coal mine.
Well, guess what? I'm not paying $2,000. I'll tell you what I did. I went back on the website, punched in one stop. Now, it makes no sense to go one stop from New York to Dallas, but I'm doing it. You know why? It's $436.
Yeah, and you know, it's a crazy part of the airline business. So they're going to have to put you on two different flights, and you know, in some ways, serve you twice as much, and you're going to pay a whole lot less.
And enjoy the airline experience even more.
Yeah, that's right, and get to see beautiful Lambert Field in St. Louis.
an underused field, by the way.
Yeah.
Ever since TWA pulled out and American basically cut their service there, the dominant carrier in St. Louis is now, you know who it is, it's Southwest.
Yeah, and it was going that way before. That was a large part of TWA's problem.
Exactly. Before I get to another item up for bids here on the Scott McCartney Prices Right, how about this reverse bidding auction Delta's suggesting for people so that if they get bumped, the lowest bidder wins?
I think it's fascinating. I you know, you really wonder what's going to happen when the frequent flyers start colluding, or you start seeing a bunch of people show up at the 5 o'clock Friday flight to LaGuardia or wherever, hoping to get bumped. People have sort of played that game for years, but now it becomes an arbitrage. Now it becomes, you know, hey, if you can get everybody on the airplane to bid nothing lower than $500 or something, then you can really stick it to the airline.
If you could do that. I remember a flight that I was on where they asked if people would give up their seats. Nobody did. The voucher went from $300 to $400, and nobody stood up. And it went to $600, and nobody stood up. And I'm watching this going, this is going to be interesting. It got to about $1,100, and I went, now they've got my attention.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I was about to, and I was about to stand up when I got trampled by everybody else who figured out the same thing.
That's funny. The Department of Transportation has proposed raising the compensation for involuntarily bumping people even more. Well, that raises the cap that's in place on how far airlines will go. You know, they would just assume involuntarily bump you if they have to pay you $800 and then give you $800 in compensation unless you're willing to take the voucher, which costs them a lot less. So
exactly.
It's really going to be interesting to see if this works in favor of travelers or if this works against travelers. And
my feeling is it's going to work against travelers because there's always going to be some idiot who's going to bid $50 because he thinks he's getting a deal.
Yeah, I think that's right. I don't think the airline would have done this if it thought it was going to be more expensive for the airline.
Oh, no, the airline's banking on a parade of idiots.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's right. And, you know, for some people, getting that $100 voucher or $150 voucher, they're going to consider that a win.
Oh, boy, yeah, the $150 voucher versus the $150 change fee.
Yeah.
Hey, let's shift gears for a second, Scott, because you had a great thing on your middle seat scorecard where you ranked the airlines, and there were some surprises and maybe not so many surprises. What did you think?
I thought it was quite interesting how last year ended up. The big airlines really had a tough year, I think for a lot of reasons, some of it their own management, some of it the impact of Mother Nature and a lot of external events last year. The smaller airlines performed much better. Alaska, AirTran, you know, even U.S. Airways had a decent year. Delta had a terrible year. American has had several terrible years, but was sort of, I think, last year saying, well, thank goodness for Delta. But it was really quite interesting. One of the more fascinating things was, I think, there's a real difference in cancellations now in strategies of different airlines. Delta is one that's canceling very aggressively, and part of that is the tarmac delay rule. Part of that is the airline's own internal problems that they're trying to fix. I was over there this week. They're putting more spare airplanes in their system. They're really trying to improve their reliability. But, you know, your chances of getting canceled on one airline can be significantly different than another carrier.
I agree. And then, of course, you have just basic customer service.
Yeah, just basic customer service. And there's been, you know, I think as anybody who travels regularly knows, a huge decline in that. Southwest was, I thought fascinating. I mean, that's a carrier that used to market itself as the Triple Crown winner, an award they invented and being first place in three different DOT categories. But now Southwest is highly mediocre. They were sixth place in baggage handling. I think seventh place in bumping people off of flights.
Wait a minute. You know what? You know why they're sixth place in baggage handling? Because they don't charge for checked bags. Everybody's going over there and dumping bags on them.
Yeah, no, that's a big part of the problem. But that doesn't mean you don't need to provide good service.
Yeah.
You know, if you're going to carry them for free and you're going to market the heck out of that, well, you better provide good service.
Oh, listen, you got to love their marketing campaign. You love their advertising campaign where they show you people in baggage fee court. I love it. But you know what? You're
amazing.
Right.
They they've gone from baggage fees to the change fee, and I think there's real traction for them there. That $150 change fee just is completely illogical to most consumers, and really infuriating. And the way they've put it up with the, you know, greedy airline executive saying, well, we have to do three clicks, so we should get $150. That really plays to how outrageous people think that fee is.
Well, listen, it is outrageous when you consider the fact there's no labor involved, number one. Number two, there's no real expense on the airline's part, and they're making more money from that than they're making on operating the airline.
Yeah, and they're going to charge you the higher fare. If there's a fare difference, you have to pay that too. So it's not, you know, it's not like you can say, well, somebody just buying a cheap ticket to swap it for a more expensive ticket. If they do that, they got to pay the higher fare.
Amazing. Well, you know what? You're always such a wealth of great, comforting information.
Well, I'm sorry there's not more good news, but
there will be
a better year. Last year was a really tough year in air travel. I have some hope that this year will be a better year, but it's going to be a much more expensive year.
Well, speaking of good news, of course, Scott's also the author of the Wall Street Journal Guide to Power Travel, and that's full of good news, because if you can avoid getting ripped off and hosed, the book is well worth the price. Scott McCartney, the travel editor for the Wall Street Journal, thanks for joining us, man. We'll talk to you soon. And when we come back, preserving the environment in the Dominican Republic. It's a great resort, but how do you keep it that way? Back with more from the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Punta Cana right after this.
To participate in the program and speak with Peter Greenberg, call 1-888-887-3837 or visit petergreenberg.com. The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now. So call us at 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. Once again, here's your host, Peter Greenberg.
33 minutes after the hour on this last weekend in January, Peter Greenberg here coming to you from the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Punta Cana, Dominican Republic. Taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. If you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill. Email me to peter@petergreenberg.com. With your name, phone number, question, or problem, we'll solve it right here on the air. And a reminder to go to our website with the incredible name, petergreenberg.com, for a comprehensive list of all the aid and relief organizations doing all that hard work right next door to us in Haiti, in western China, in Chile, and, of course, in the Gulf of Mexico, stuff where you can actually physically, personally, actively get involved, because the volunteer vacation you give back, you get so much more in the process. So please check out that website. You will be pleasantly surprised at all the different things you can actually get involved with that really speak to your own affinity, your area of expertise. I encourage you to do that. And as I said at the beginning, we're coming to you from the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino, brand new, just opened in Punta Cana, Dominican Republic. When I landed at the airport, there are at least 12 planes on the ground. It is a very popular destination for vacationers coming from all over the world. And what's interesting about that, of course, is development. And how do you develop and still be responsible at the same time? Well, my next guest knows a little bit about that. He's the director of the Punta Cana Foundation, and his name, Jake Keel. Hey, Jake.
Hi there. How are you, Peter?
I'm doing fine. I mean, here you are in beautiful Dominican Republic, in Punta Cana, and you have a responsibility on one hand to preserve the economy and grow the economy, and at the same time preserve the environment. It's a very delicate balance, and you got a tough job.
Yeah, well, you know, it's fundamental to tourism, especially in the Dominican Republic, to figure out ways that you can have development, you can create jobs and job opportunities, but still have protection of the main attractions that people come to see in the first place. The Dominican Republic has a great cultural attractions. It has, you know, a terrific personality of the people, but it also has really rich natural resources. And so you have to make sure that you're taking into account both the people and the land in the process of creating new business. So it's definitely a challenge, but we're definitely committed to sustainable development and looking at different ways that we can implement it.
All right, so I've got to ask you this stupid question because it's a word that drives me a little nuts. I hope you'll bear with me on this. Sustainable. It's sort of like ecotourism. You know, I worry that it's a word that or it's a term that either gets misunderstood, misused, or some cases totally misapplied. Describe sustainability as it relates to Punta Cana.
Well, we think that there's definitely three pieces to any sustainability, and that's economic, social, and environmental. And we don't follow any prescribed definition of it. I definitely agree with you that there are a lot of people that sort of take the term and, you know, use it to their own benefit, whether or not they're actually doing any projects. What we try and do is create living, breathing examples of sustainability, looking at things that are actually helping people, that are actually protecting the environment, actually, you know, sustain our business as well. And I can give you lots of examples of specific projects that we've implemented that sort of represent that. That sort of mind frame.
Okay, I'm all ears. Go. I'm with you. Give me an example.
For example, one of the things that we've done is we've implemented a project we call Zero Waste, and it's sort of an international movement trying to eliminate or minimize the amount of waste that any project or community or city produces. And so the way that we did that is we conducted a pretty large-scale study of the types of waste that we produce, including the international airport at Punta Cana that you discussed a little bit ago, and we looked at how much we produce and where it goes now. The Dominican Republic really doesn't have the kind of sanitary landfills we have in the United States. We basically have sort of pit landfills, and, you know, it's not the best way to store waste and the best use of it. So after we conducted this study, we started segregating all of the waste that we produce, both in the homes of Punta Cana Resort and Club, both in the restaurants of the hotel, and also the airplanes. Of the airplanes that now arrive, we are able to recycle 47% of the materials that are brought with us. You know, the planes arrive, don't just drop off the tourists, they also drop off their garbage. And so this is a huge cost savings for us. It protects the environment in a very real way, and it also, you know, helps our local community.
I love the idea that you're doing 47% of what's coming off those planes, because a couple of years ago, we actually met an incoming plane in Los Angeles with the cleaning crew. We walked in, and I actually brought in scales. We weighed all the stuff that people left on that plane. It was staggering.
Yeah, it's really amazing. At the airport, you know, per year, we're now receiving 2 million passengers at the Punta Cana International Airport. And so you can imagine how much waste they bring. When we did our study, we looked at which planes produce which amount of different amounts of waste, because we wanted to know for the future how to project and then scale up our operations for separating the waste. And it's really quite amazing. A lot of the flights from Europe, because they're much longer flights, because they give you a lot more on the flight, they're coming with a huge amount of waste, you know, much more so than even, you know, the United States, we think of sort of big waste producers.
Yep.
So at our airport now, we can get anywhere from 5 to 6 tons of waste a day.
Well, Jay Keel, the director of Punta Cana Foundation, of course, the website is puntacana.org. Check them out to figure out how you can help when you visit this beautiful location. Back with more from the Hard Rock Resort and Casino in Punta Cana, with a little bit of history. And, of course, Life of the Exquisite. How about that for a tease?
Call now to talk to Peter Greenberg at 1-888-887-3837 or email him at peter@petergreenberg.com. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by
Travel Guard Insurance. For travel insurance plans for the unexpected, see your travel agent or visit TravelGuard.com for affordable travel insurance protection from Travel Guard.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
Welcome back. 43 minutes after the hour, coming to you from the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Punta Cana in the Dominican Republic. Taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88 Peter. If you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill. Email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem. My next guest, what a great idea for a book. I'm jealous. Talk about an encyclopedia. It's not just the encyclopedia of, like, the regular or the mundane or the boring. No, 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 no. This is called the Encyclopedia of the Exquisite. And her name, Jessica Kerwin Jenkins. Hey, Jessica.
Hey, how are you?
How'd you come up with this idea? What a scam.
I know. I'm so lucky to have had the opportunity to write it, actually. I'd been working at magazines for a million years, and every time I did research for a story, when I would come across something just that made my eyes go wide and made me feel like the world was a great place, I kept it in a file on my desk. And one day when I left my day job, I made that whole file into a book, so it's everything. Well, I think is really wonderful and beautiful and makes the world worth living in.
Well, you've got about 100 special entries in this book. Give me an idea of the range that you've got in here.
Well, you know, it's from everything from the fashion world to beauty to home to cooking to gardening, all the finer things in life. I've even included some recipes, and there's loads of history, 18th century France, ancient Rome, medieval Japan. It sort of spans the globe and all of the eras, just picking and choosing what really makes life beautiful.
Now, to be somewhat of a devil's advocate here, the word exquisite is a rather subjective term.
Mm-hmm.
So what's your definition of exquisite?
Well, it's funny. When I'd been beginning my research and looking for a title for the book, I felt like the word exquisite kept coming to mind. But when I actually did my homework and took down the Oxford English Dictionary and looked up exquisite, it didn't mean sort of a moneyed luxury. It didn't have that kind of connotation the way we use the word today. It comes from the Latin verb that means to search. And when I heard that, my eyes just lit up. And it's really the things that are worth searching for, that are that rare, that would send you out on a hunt. And I feel like that's what sort of holds everything together, that sense of wonder that you just go chasing down, you know, what you have to have in your life.
So it's not price-related, it's value-related.
Exactly. It's not about spending a lot of money and swiping your credit card through a machine. It's about making your life richer every day. So
of all the entries in the book, I know this will be a tough question for you. What's the most exquisite for you?
Oh, that's really hard. I think one that helps me explain the book to people really well and one that's become important to me is the entry on the Bon Chrétien pear. It's like the Bartlett pear, and it's the history of that pear. And in the United States, that is the most distributed pear. It seems really common. You can go to your corner store and get it for a dollar. But knowing that it had this provenance of being in Versailles where the King Louis would give it to his courtiers as a gift, and just sort of the romance of that makes eating an everyday pear something special.
So the next time I'm at a Safeway, I'm just going to basically caress the pear.
Well, I think you should. You know, that's what this book is about, including entries on the omelet and sort of how French chefs used to cook the omelet in the 18th century and how Julia Child used to cook the omelet and her special techniques. It sort of brings it to a new level. It's not just breaking eggs into a pan.
No, you have to break the eggs into a pan. And now, as I break the eggs into the pan, I'm going to... No, then I shake the chicken.
Good.
No, that was Julia. Okay, sorry. Are there things that are just not exquisite enough to make it in the book? Is there one that you said this is not going in the book?
Well, of course, once I started writing the book, I would just get emails and phone calls every time I'd go to a dinner party. Everyone has their opinion of what they think is exquisite and should be included. And some of those did make the cut, but some things like chocolate, although everyone loves chocolate, including myself, it just felt kind of obvious. And there were other things when I did the search and I did the research, they just didn't turn up anything kind of surprising. You know, cashmere is fur from a goat. It's not that glamorous. So it kind of didn't make the cut.
Although I have to tell you, if we're talking about exquisite chocolate, may I lead you please to the country of Belgium.
Oh,
the
yeah?
best chocolatiers in the world, the most exquisite chocolates are Belgian. I'm sorry. Not to mention they got better French fries than the French.
They really do. I will agree with you on that one. They'll have to be for volume two.
You got it. Well, volume one is called The Encyclopedia of the Exquisite, of course, published by Random House. And the author and our guest, Jessica Kerwin Jenkins. Jessica, thanks for joining us. We really appreciate that.
Thanks.
It was an exquisite interview. All right. When we come back, we're going to be joined by somebody who's about to make me feel very old because the Hard Rock is celebrating its, are you ready? Sit down, 40th anniversary. Back with more from the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Punta Cana, Dominican Republic, right after this.
The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now, so call us at 1-888-88-PETER. That's 1-888-887-3837. To participate in the program and speak with Peter Greenberg, call 1-888-887-3837 or visit petergreenberg.com. Now back to Peter Greenberg Worldwide.
52 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg here with you from the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Punta Cana in the Dominican Republic. Taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. You know, I said at the beginning that I'm feeling a little bit old because the Hard Rock is actually celebrating its 40th anniversary as a brand. I have a philosophy, and the philosophy is if you want to track democracy around the world, figure out who's opening a Hard Rock. I knew things were going to get better when I showed up in Beirut, and there was not one, but two Hard Rocks at one point. I'm waiting for one to open up in Havana. I'm waiting for one to open up in northern Iraq. It could happen at any minute. Well, one just did open up right here in Punta Cana, and we're here for the opening of that. And joining me now, the CEO and president of Hard Rock International, Hamish Dodds. How are you, man?
I'm great. How are you, Peter?
I'm okay. You heard what I said about the tracking of democracy around the world. I mean, it is a ubiquitous brand. I remember the Hard Rock in London right at the beginning of Piccadilly there, and many, many years ago. And there was always a line. You couldn't get in this place. Always a line out in front. And I kept on saying, well, I'm not going to go because I don't stand in line. And somebody said to me one day, you know what? We're going to give you a lifetime Hard Rock gold card. I said, really? How cool is that? What does that do? It says, it always gets you in. So I had this in my wallet. I never used it. And one night, it was about 11 o'clock at night. I'm running around with friends in London. We all wanted to get something to eat. Nobody knew where to go. I said, wait a minute. I've got this card. Let's go check it out. And there was this line literally around the block, and I said, watch this, not knowing anything. I pull out the card and showed it to the maitre d' and went, ooh, and they brought us right in. It was great. That was my Hard Rock experience. And then I found out that most of the people who were standing in line weren't there to eat. They were there to buy jackets. Am I right?
Sometimes, yes. I mean, our merchandise is very, very popular, and so people come for both.
I mean, but when you opened up certain hotels in some relatively iconic locations that really were branded before you got there, like Las Vegas,
right?
It changed a lot of things, didn't it?
Yeah, no, I think so. And I think just to your earlier point, one of the things we're trying to do is to go to more countries so people can really explore our brand in more countries.
Don't say bland.
Brand, yeah. No, so, I mean, recently we just opened in Ho Chi Minh City in Vietnam. So for us, that's a very nice coup. And in Beirut, I think when you were there, there was probably a false Hard Rock Cafe.
There was.
That we got rid of, and now we have our own sort of primary cafe there as well.
You do. So. I was in Cartagena. In Colombia, there's a Hard Rock there.
Yes, I mean, we're there. And in Medellin, we just opened one in Medellin this year. Absolutely fabulous.
And nobody would have thought that ever you'd open up one in Medellin.
No, not at all. And I think, you know, to your point, I'm not sure that we're going to be in Iraq any day now, but, you know, we're looking at places like Syria. And ultimately, you know, once our relationships improve in Cuba, Havana's a perfect place for us to be.
But you see, what you could do is you could open one in Iraq and call it, you're between a rock and a Hard Rock place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've seen that before. I've also seen a lot of folks coming back with Hard Rock Baghdad T-shirts that
see?
I know we don't have.
Well, that's actually about people kind of like co-opting the brand, uh-huh. And you're seeing Hard Rock locations on T-shirts that you don't, I mean, not just there, but uh-huh. Everywhere.
No, it happens. You know, obviously our legal guys are trying to be all over that, but sometimes the fact that people are interested in selling our merchandise is a great testament to the brand as well.
Well, let's talk about that right here. Why Punta Cana? Why Dominican Republic?
You know, we're always looking for great resort locations. Dominican Republic's actually the number one tourist destination in the Caribbean. There's 10 million people here. And in Punta Cana, there are 30,000 hotel rooms and some pretty good airlift. So for our brand...
It's all about the airlift, isn't it?
It is in the Caribbean. And for our brand, you know, this particular resort was built by our partners from Mexico. And they built it and started to open it when the hotel industry and the travel industry were crashing. So our brand helps them. It also helps us in our global footprint. So we collaborated and put our brand on this brand new property, and we're both now, you know, learning how to move that marriage forward and trying to make a really great location here for visitors, convention guests, and the like.
Talking about global footprint, let's talk about some places that might be somewhat troubled, mm-hmm. like Mexico right now.
Right.
What are you doing to help in that situation?
Well, we have a franchise partner in Mexico, and, you know, I think that there are some real challenges when you sort of look at the newspapers, particularly in the U.S. It's very focalized, I think, on drugs at the border. But if you go to somewhere like Cancun, the hotel industry in Cancun is still doing pretty well. There have been no tourists shot in Cancun for the last 5 years, and I think that there are some messages from a PR point of view that we can do to help balance out some of that negative press as well.
I mean, I've been saying this on this show for a long time, that people get a map. If you take a look at the distance between Tijuana and Cancun, it's almost the equivalent of the distance between Los Angeles and New York.
Yeah.
Mexico is a huge country, and if you stay away from the border towns at this point and realize that that's all cartel against cartel, you're not going to have a problem.
Mm-hmm. No, I think it's unfortunate. And, you know, you look at what's happening now in Tunisia, in Egypt, certainly with some of the political...
You have a Hard Rock in Egypt?
We have three in Egypt. We have
Excuse me.
Yeah, thank you very much. We have one in Sharm el-Sheikh, one in Hurghada, which are Red Sea resorts, and then one in Cairo as well.
But, you know, I just wrote a blog today mm-hmm. saying that I would not stop traveling to Egypt, that Americans are not being targeted. Americans were not targeted in the disturbances in Thailand. Americans are not targeted in Mexico unless you happen to be a drug dealer in Nuevo Laredo and you happen to be an American. Mm-hmm. I mean, the highest per capita murder rate countries in the world are highest per capita murder rate with the people killing their own citizens, their fellow citizens, not us.
Yeah, no, that's true.
And then, of course, you have that major crime capital where you're based, Orlando.
There you go.
Hamish Dodds, the CEO and president of Hard Rock International. Thanks for having us down here. It's a big hotel.
It is, and we're filling it, and people are loving it. So thanks for inviting us.
Oh,
thanks for coming.
You got it. That'll be $5.
All right.
Okay, you got it. That music means we're out of time for this hour. For those stations leaving us, have a great rest of your weekend. And for those stations sticking around, we got a whole lot more coming from the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Punta Cana in the Dominican Republic. Back with more of Peter Greenberg Worldwide right after this.
You've been listening to Peter Greenberg Worldwide. Visit our website at www.petergreenberg.com. Live from around the world, it's time for Peter Greenberg Worldwide with America's number one frontline travel news journalist. Get on the phone now and call 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. And now, the man who travels over 400,000 miles each year, the travel detective, Peter Greenberg.
Welcome aboard Peter Greenberg Worldwide. Hope you're having a wonderful last weekend in January, wherever you happen to be. That's right, we've had 5 weekends in January, hard to believe. And we've been traveling the world left and right. Last week, you know, we were on the Disney Dream on its inaugural cruise, then crisscrossed the country about twice, which is actually a low number for me, and then tried to get back east during the middle of the winter snowstorms. Ha ha. So diverted another way and came down to where we are now. Get your maps out, boys and girls. 18 degrees, 32 minutes north, 68 degrees, 22 minutes west. We are coming to you from the new Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Punta Cana in the Dominican Republic, about as far away from 3 feet of snow as you can get. Taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. If you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill. Email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem. We'll solve it right here on the air. And speaking of maps, if you see the Dominican Republic, then you know what's next door to us, a country that's had a terrible time over the last, well, 14 months, and continues to have a huge rebuilding problem and a huge rebuilding challenge. Something that you can also get involved in. And joining me on the line right now, from the Haiti delegation of the American Red Cross, Julie Sell. Hey, Julie.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Happy to have you. Your home right now is Port-au-Prince, so you're ground zero there. You're seeing what's going on. We've seen so many people go down there. We've seen so much work being done, but I think you'd be the first to tell me how much more work there is yet to be done.
Absolutely. As your listeners undoubtedly know, just over a year ago, this devastating earthquake hit the capital of Haiti. As many as 250,000 people lost their lives and 1.5 million were left homeless. And I have to tell you, you know, having lived here for many months, that still there are piles of rubble everywhere and many, too many people still living under tarps and tents. But having said that, there are also signs of progress, and we at the American Red Cross have been working incredibly hard since those very first hours to get people into, you know, shelter, get them food, water, and now we're moving into, you know, more sustainable programs as well.
I mean, what was really amazing to me and sort of heartening was that so many Americans at $10 a pop donated to the American Red Cross just by texting on their phone, and you raised, what, more than $32 million?
Yeah, it was phenomenal. This, you know, broke all records for fundraising via texting. And what was really exciting and heartening for us is how many young people, you know, teenagers, college students, donated for the first time via text messaging. So there's a lot of potential there. Something that's been kind of exciting for us here on the ground is to realize that texting technology also can actually help deliver aid to victims. We are working with our compatriots in the Global Red Cross Network to actually send out text messages to Haitians living in these camps to tell them about things like cholera prevention, how to prepare for earthquakes and hurricanes. In some cases, funds are being transferred via phone. So text technology, even for people who have virtually nothing, is really revolutionizing the way that aid is being delivered.
Well, you know, it's one thing to give everybody a hearty pat on the back for raising $32 million, and, of course, that's money well spent. But for those people listening to the show, how can they get physically, actively involved on the ground, maybe, given their own areas of expertise, doing, you know, what you guys are doing?
Sure. Well, there are all sorts of groups working here on the ground in Haiti. You know, the American Red Cross, unlike the way that we work domestically, where people are familiar with seeing that, you know, logo and the volunteers everywhere, internationally we do work a little differently. We don't take volunteers typically because we're really trying to work as closely as possible with the Haitian Red Cross as well as local employees. So they're people who understand the language and the culture. And in addition, it means we're not spending donated dollars, you know, to fly people down or to house them and that sort of thing from the States. So we want to thank everyone in the States for their overwhelming generosity and, you know, hope they will continue to support the American Red Cross. They can go to our website, which is www.redcross.org/Haiti, to read about our work in Haiti, and also the main website has information on donating. But unfortunately, we are not taking volunteers down here as an organization. I know others are, and I'd encourage people to look into that.
And by the way, Julie, if they go to our website, which is petergreenberg.com, we have a comprehensive list of all the aid and relief organizations doing that who will take the volunteers. And it's amazing how many different areas of expertise they can need and do need that people can just fit right into. It's the best volunteer vacation they could ever experience because what they get back is an exponential result of what they're giving. And bottom line is, what's your biggest challenge right now, a year after the earthquake?
Sure. Well, there are many. I would say the biggest one we continue to face is finding available land. The American Red Cross and our partners in the Red Cross Network have a plan to build 30,000 semi-permanent homes and down the line even more permanent homes. But to do that, we need places to build. And as you look around Port-au-Prince, this is a crowded, hilly city, and there are still piles of rubble everywhere. So we are, you know, looking to the Haitian government, to the authorities, to, you know, help us not only with debris removal but also identifying land. And it's tricky because land ownership in this country was complicated even before the earthquake. You can imagine now with so many records buried under that rubble, it's very hard sometimes to sort out who owns what. And, of course, you know, we're here as visitors, so we want to help, but we can't just move ahead and start building anywhere. So I would say that continues to be one of our biggest challenges.
I mean, a staggering figure is 1.3 million homeless as a result of that earthquake.
Yeah.
It's hard for people to fathom that, but that's a reality.
It is. You know, the good news is that there are signs of progress. The UN just came out with some new figures recently showing that the number of people living in these camps has dropped from, as you say, about 1.3 million or more down to about 800,000. That's still way too many people living in
the
camps.
Whoa, that is way too many people.
It's a significant drop.
You're right. You know, it's a significant
drop. More of them are moving into these homes that we're building, and we hope that trend continues.
Still way too many people, Julie. A lot more work needs to be done. The website again is
redcross.org/Haiti.
That's the way to go.
And I do want to say that the American Red Cross plans to be here in Haiti until every donated dollar has been spent. So we will probably be here another 3 to 5 years.
Julie Sell from the Haitian delegation of the American Red Cross. Julie, thank you so much for joining us. And we will stay on top of this. Obviously, it's a story that's not going away, and we need as much help as they do. So help them out. Back with more from the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Punta Cana in the Dominican Republic, right next door to Haiti, right after this.
The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now, so call us at 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by
MedJet Assist. If you're injured or hospitalized while traveling, MedJet Assist will arrange medical transportation directly to the hospital of your choice. Travel safely and be smart. Get MedJet Assist. Take trips, not chances.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
It's 18 minutes after the hour. Peter Greenberg coming to you from the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Punta Cana in the Dominican Republic. It's their first all-inclusive Hard Rock Hotel, and come to think of it, even though they're celebrating their 40th anniversary, it's their first Hard Rock Hotel in the Caribbean, which I found really hard to believe, but it is. Taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888 888-PETER. If you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill. Email me to peter@petergreenberg.com. And after our last caller from the American Red Cross, I want to encourage you again to go to our website, petergreenberg.com, for that comprehensive list of all the aid and relief organizations doing all that hard and essential work in Haiti. They need your help. 800,000 people still homeless. Come on, travelers. Get on that website and see how you can help out. Let's go right to the phones. We've got Todd calling from Redondo Beach, California. Hey, Todd.
Hey, Peter. How you doing?
Good. How can I help you?
I'm planning a trip to Europe this September to celebrate my retirement, and we would like to hit London, Paris, and end up in Munich for Oktoberfest.
So you really want to retire by drinking?
Yes.
Okay, I got the concept. Okay, this will be Todd's final drink fest in Munich. Okay.
Right.
Well, here's the way I suggest it. I hope you're going to go after September 15th. Is that correct?
Yeah, exactly. I'm looking at the last 2 weeks of September.
Good, because that's when the fares are going to come down. And what I'd suggest that you do is buy what we call an open jaw ticket. And that means you'd go from Los Angeles to London and then return Munich to Los Angeles.
Right.
And the open part of that jaw is what you're going to do by train.
Okay.
And you just buy your rail pass, and that'll get you from London and the tunnel to Paris, and then from Paris to Munich. And then after that, you're going to need a designated driver anyway.
Right.
So that's really what I do. Now, the one thing I have to tell you about Oktoberfest is if you want to stay in Munich for Oktoberfest, you'll have to mortgage your house.
Really?
Everything will be crowded. However, the transportation system in Germany next to Switzerland is like nothing's better. And so you could stay actually 30 miles outside of Munich and just come in by train every day and be in great shape. I wouldn't stay in Munich only because the prices will be out of control.
Okay, that's a good suggestion.
Go ahead.
How about in London? What's a good area?
Well, the good news is you won't be competing with the royal wedding by that time. You'll still be able to buy a few more pathetic commemorative plates. But the bottom line is, in London, there are so many different great hotels that are not necessarily five-star. I keep telling everybody this. How much time do you spend in your hotel room other than showering and sleeping? I mean, you're not going to be entertaining the entire King family in your suite, so why would you want to pay for that? If you go to our website, we have a whole section in there called London Off the Brochure, and that'll give you all sorts of options of places that you might not think about, and some of them branded. I mean, there's some Holiday Inns in London that are really quite reasonable and in great locations as well. And also think, this may come as a surprise to you, Best Western. You know, the traditional concept of a Best Western hotel in this country is cinder block walls, bad shag carpets, beds that sag, and TVs that give off lethal doses of radiation. You know what? Overseas, it's not that at all. It's a reservation system in which you can find chateaus in France that are Best Westerns, and unbelievable mansions in Switzerland that are Best Westerns, and really decent hotels in London that are also Best Westerns, in Paris as well, by the way, okay?
All right. Now, is it too early to start booking things and buying tickets for airlines?
Yes, it is, because the computers are not set up to give you a discount yet. I'd say 45 to 60 days out. You're going to start seeing sales for Europe hitting at about the 1st of August, and that's when you hit. Don't do it now. You won't find any deals.
Okay. And how about getting from London to Stonehenge?
Whoa, that's a different one. I wouldn't suggest that you drive it, because you may not be in an accident, but you'll cause one. So you might want to find a motor coach or a car and a driver to take you up there for the day.
Okay. And I've heard you talk
before
about certain credit cards that you should use and shouldn't use.
Well, last but not least, I'll give you my advice on credit cards. Beware of what they call the foreign transaction fee, and there are many credit cards that will nail you for that, anywhere from 1% to 3% of whatever you buy overseas, and you don't see it till you get your bill. My suggestion is go with either Capital One. They don't have one, and a few other banks don't have one as well. Check with your bank to make sure that they're not ripping you off on that foreign transaction fee. Okay, Todd?
Okay.
All right. Thanks for the call. We appreciate it. And we'll look forward to reading the police reports in Munich after your experience at Oktoberfest. Okay?
All right. Thanks a lot, Peter.
You got it. Speaking of police reports, no better person to segue into this show than our good friend from the New York Times. You read him every Tuesday. A good friend of ours, Mr. Joe Sharkey. Hello,
hey,
Joe.
Hey, Peter. How you doing?
I'm doing okay.
Good.
You know, we're talking about Todd going to Oktoberfest in Munich. You just had a great story about first aid training. How about a segue on that?
Sure. First of all, I want to say something that I thought that was very good advice on the Holiday Inns and Best Westerns internationally. They're really quite a surprise. They're really not bad hotels. I agree.
Yeah, they really
first aid, okay. I live in Tucson, and, you know, there was this horrible incident here, you know, this mass shooting. And it occurred to me that the one thing, Tucson is a very community-oriented city. It's a really nice place, and people sort of get involved. But I was amazed, and it really hit me immediately, at how many people who were on the scene of that shooting were able to respond immediately. I don't mean first responders. I mean these were the people who were right there when the, you know, when the gunfire was still in the air, who knew basic first aid and CPR. And it occurred to me, and I wrote about this in my column 2 weeks ago, wow, if I had been there, I would have been useless. The last time I had first aid training was literally when I was in the Boy Scouts. Dwight Eisenhower was the president. And, you know, I think anything I might have learned then is probably not very useful now, even if I remembered it. I remember there was stuff about tourniquets and things like that that would not be useful. But it occurred to me that so simple to get good basic first aid training. And I just decided that, you know, that since I travel a lot and you never know when something's going to happen, why not? And why not encourage other people to just simply have that simple skill? I know a lot of people do, but, you know, I was so impressed with the number of people who were able to respond and save lives before the EMS got there.
Oh, I totally agree. You know, you don't have to be an EMT person. You can do basic first aid. And one of the things that has changed in terms of protocols, by the way, since you were in the Boy Scouts, is CPR itself. As you may know, I'm a volunteer firefighter, and we go through recurrent training. We go through recurrent training all the time. And what I had to be retrained in is CPR because it's no longer about mouth-to-mouth. It's about chest compressions.
Right.
And what they've determined is the mouth-to-mouth isn't really helping anything anymore. It's really chest compressions. And that really came into play during this terrible shooting.
Yes. And not, you know, guys like you hadn't gotten there yet. They didn't get there for, you know, you get there, what, 4 minutes later? You're right on the spot.
If we're lucky.
People who were right on the scene immediately who knew something. And they were able to do the basic things that needed to be done before the people with real training, good training, got there. And I, you know, I just think that's an extra layer of safety and good citizenship that just had not occurred to me.
It's more than just safety and good citizenship. It's common sense if you're to be a traveler because, you know, it's not just about getting hurt or injured or in a crucial situation at home. It's whenever you walk out of your house and go anywhere.
That's right.
And isn't it amazing, Joe, that it's only been in recent years that the airlines got smart and started, at least some of them, in training their own flight attendants and flight crew into basic, you know, basic first aid? Because why shouldn't you? You need to stabilize somebody before you can treat them.
Right. Yeah, and this old cliche, is there a doctor in the house? Well, there may well be and there may not be, but you can, you know, if you've got the basic skill, you can do something. I don't know why they can't set aside, and airports hate me for saying this, why do airports just have to be places where you buy booze and food and designer handbags? Why can't they set aside some of that unused or little used retail space for things like, you know, a place where you could get first aid training, where you're waiting, a place where, oh, you know, the safety demonstrations could be, you know, more or less permanently in place, how to open an exit door on an airplane. I mean,
you know
because we've actually been through the, you know, that kind of safety training, but most people don't know that. And, you know, those are just simple skills that are very easy to learn. And I'm just sort of on this kick that I'm encouraging
more
attention to that.
Listen, you're absolutely right. The best example I can give you is in Las Vegas, where the casinos finally got wild and wise and had the paramedics from Clark County train all their security guards as basically EMTs, and guess what? They really are the first responders if somebody collapses at a casino.
Oh, did they do that? That's interesting.
Not only did they do it, statistically, I hate to say this, Las Vegas is probably one of the best places in America to have a heart attack because your chances of survival are increased exponentially because by the time the paramedics arrive, you've already been stabilized by a security guard.
There you go. So what stays in Vegas can actually get out of Vegas.
On that note, Joe Sharkey, columnist in the New York Times. We read him every Tuesday. He'll be applying tourniquets at your command. Joe Sharkey, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks again, Joe. We really appreciate that. And when we come back, speaking of Vegas, a good friend of ours from Vegas who actually happens to be here in the Dominican Republic because he's opening another restaurant. He's unstoppable. Kerry Simon, when we come back from the Hard Rock in Punta Cana.
To participate in the program and speak with Peter Greenberg, call 1-888-887-3837 or visit petergreenberg.com. The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now. So call us at 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. Once again, here's your host, Peter Greenberg.
33 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg coming to you from the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Punta Cana in the Dominican Republic. An amazingly large place, 1,800 rooms, huge acreage, lots of water activities, and I think there's drinking going on, but I'll get back to that later. Speaking of food and drink, listen to this. He was the youngest executive chef in the history of the Plaza Hotel, but I will not hold that against him. He and I met, of course, when he was doing some great stuff, still is, at Caesar's Palace in Las Vegas, and also at the Palms, and now he's opening up a new restaurant right here in Punta Cana at the Hard Rock, Carrie Simon. Hey, Carrie.
Hey, hey. It's nice to be here.
Now, when we met in Las Vegas,
right,
you were doing a specific type of cuisine.
I have two places in Vegas. I've got one that's Simon.
It's the burgers.
Place,
it's the burgers.
And then the burger place, KGB.
Yeah. Right.
The burger place.
Right. And then you got the one at Palms.
At Palms Place, yeah.
Right. What's going to be different about this? I mean, because I'm assuming something, and please correct me, but if you're in Las Vegas, sourcing stuff is easy. I mean, you can get anything you want flown in that day. Everything's fresh, whatever you want, boom, they truck it in, they fly it in, it's there.
Yeah.
You're now on an island, my friend.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's funny, when we were doing, when my first meeting down here, I was wandering through the kitchen and I saw the meat company that I use in Las Vegas, and I was like, hey, what's that? And they go, we fly our stuff in. And I go, well, how often do you, same meat exactly. So I was like, oh, well, that's great. So that's a good sign. So there's, I feel there's some good signs to this, the whole thing, you know.
Well, what brought you down here? Have you been down to the Dominican Republic before?
Well, like, this is my third trip. The people who own it, the Shapur family, with the Hard Rock, you know, they convinced me that to do the restaurant here, and I think, you know, it'll be great.
Is it going to be a burger place?
No, it's going to be. There will be burgers for sure.
There'll be burgers everywhere. We know that.
Yeah. It's going to be. It'll be just more about products as usual. You know, it'll be. I'm going to try and see what I can get locally here and what I can get close as possible to here.
Now, without getting too cliched, I mean, you've been described as like the rock and roll chef.
Yeah.
So here we are at the Hard Rock. So what, it's going to be like Mick Jagger's, string beans? What?
I don't know. No, I won't go that. You know, I did a restaurant in the Hard Rock in Vegas. That's where I got my start,
right,
with Peter Morton. And so, you know, it's kind of coming back home with me with these guys. I know them. I know their concept. I know how they work. So it's an easy connection.
Well, I know that when you do the potatoes, the mashed potatoes, it was like wasabi mashed potatoes.
Correct.
Which is very cool.
Yeah.
That's mashed potatoes with a kick.
Well, it's tuna, you know, grilled tuna with wasabi mash and a little soy caramel sauce. And those are, to me, a great marriage. You know, it's like a good way to eat with some ginger. And you've got a mixture of a couple different cuisines going on there. And great flavors, explodes in your mouth, grilling. You know, it's...
Okay, can I say something like really stupid? You ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Everywhere I go to a resort and you ask what the fish is for dinner, every time you go anywhere in the world, it's mahi-mahi. I've had it with mahi-mahi. I
don't think it's going to happen with my restaurant. So I hope you won't
after
be
this conversation.
Well, I hope you won't be disappointed. I really didn't have that on the list.
I'm very happy you don't have it on the list. But what kind of fish will you be serving?
Well, that's a good question, because I was, we were talking about sushi, putting a little sushi bar in the restaurant today. And so I'm going to have to do some research and figure out what is available for me here.
I mean, because it's mahi-mahi sushi.
Well,
you see, you're in trouble.
There
now.
You go. That'll scare you.
I'm already scared.
Me too.
What are the other challenges you're facing?
I think that putting a restaurant together that's a Simon brand and maintaining the quality is going to be one of the big challenges. So I'll put one of my guys that's more qualified for that kind of situation. And I think it'll work. You know, the Hard Rock understands me already, so I think it'll work well, you know.
What's the most difficult dish you're doing now?
The most difficult dish?
In your other restaurants.
In my other restaurants? It's probably this. I have this spicy sesame rice with tuna tartare that we do, and it's like rice that's cooked, and it's layered in seaweed, and then it has some sesame seed in it. It's flattened out, and then it's fried, and then it's
so it's crispy.
It's crispy, yeah, and you have to cool it down.
So it tastes just like chicken.
Exactly, or rabbit. And you put tuna tartare on it, avocados, and it's, you know, that's probably one of the more complicated.
Is there a way to figure out the psychographics of the audience down here since you haven't opened the restaurant yet as to what they really want to order?
Well, you know, I kind of think that what I'm going to do is some of my stuff that are my dishes, you know, that people will expect to see, you know. And then I'm going to play around with some what I've yet to discover is what Dominican food is. And then I'll do some research and try and do my interpretation of it and then have fun with that, too, you know.
So they'll be a thinly disguised mahi-mahi.
Well, maybe. I don't know, but not mahi-mahi. We'll call it something else.
As I said, thinly disguised. When are you opening?
We're going to open probably in the summertime. We're starting design meetings. Just that's why I'm here, partly, you know, for the opening and to figure out what we're going to do with the space.
You're going to bring your staff down here to, like, jumpstart this?
Well, I'll bring like a team of people in to open it up, and then a couple will stay behind, and then, you know, I'll be in and out.
Will there be meatloaf on the menu?
There will be meatloaf on the menu.
Why?
Because I think that there's an American market here, and I think at some point during this day, you are going to refer to something that you're familiar with.
You know, when I think of the Dominican Republic, meatloaf comes immediately to mind.
Yeah, I know. Well, that's what you're going to think in the future. You may be thinking mahi-mahi right now, but you're going to be thinking meatloaf.
And they both start with M. Unbelievable. Kerry Simon, man.
Great to see you again.
Thanks
to have me. All right.
All right.
Great
when we come
you.
Back, more with Peter Greenberg Worldwide. No meatloaf, no mahi-mahi, just me, another M. Back with more from the Punta Cana Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in the Dominican Republic, known for its mahi-mahi and meatloaf, right after this.
Call now to talk to Peter Greenberg at 1-888-887-3837 or email him at peter@petergreenberg.com. The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now, so call us at 1-888-88-PETER. That's 1-888-887-3837. Now back to Peter Greenberg Worldwide.
43 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg coming to you from the brand new Hard Rock Hotel, just opening in Punta Cana in the Dominican Republic, taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER, and if you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill. If you don't know the drill by now, I'm feeling sorry for you because we've been doing this every 5 minutes. You can always email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem. We'll solve it right here on the air. I love stuff that's not in the brochures. In fact, if it's in the brochure, I don't want to know about it. So I was particularly interested to read this story in budgettravel.com, the 9 best secret hotels in the world. And the author of that, Kate Appleton. Hey, Kate.
Hi, Peter. Thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah, so, I mean, I love this stuff. I mean, everybody's always asking me for my little secret out-of-the-way places, but these are truly places that you think nobody knows about, huh?
Yeah, well, it's one of those things where these are places that we really love and we want to share them with our readers, but you're always a little reluctant, too, because part of the charm of these places is that they are kind of undiscovered. They're a little bit out of the way.
All right, so you've done the damage now because the cat's out of the bag.
Exactly.
All right, so you've got one in Jamaica called the Rock House Hotel.
Exactly. So, you know, Jamaica is one of the most popular and affordable destinations in the Caribbean. But this place in Negril gets you a little bit away from kind of the party scene of Negril, the sprawling resorts. It's a series of 20 thatch roof villas that are along a cliff. Each one has a private deck for sunbathing. So it's very romantic, very low-key. You can hang out by the pool, take yoga classes, stroll down to the beach, really feel like you're in a little hideaway in the Caribbean.
And it's not a big place. Only about, what, 20 villas, right?
Exactly. So, you know, you're really going to get away from the crowds. It's nothing like a spring break experience. It's really a different kind of Caribbean.
And that's about $125 a night. And then you've got one in Positano, not known for its affordability, but this might be different, huh?
No, in fact, I mean, it's the Amalfi Coast, so it's one of, you know, the all-time favorite destinations in Italy. It can be very expensive. This place is a family-run spot called Albergo California. It can be as low as $135 a night for a room, and, you know, no matter what room you're staying in, you still get to enjoy the huge wraparound terrace that has these really perfect postcard views of the craggy cliffs that you think of when you think of the Amalfi Coast, the water. You might even luck out with one of the few rooms that has a ceiling fresco dating back to the 18th century. Really has that Italian charm.
Not bad. Now, moving on, you know, everyone wants to go to Napa. Everyone wants to go to California wine country, and you pay a price, except for the one you found.
Yeah, exactly. So we went scouting around and found a place in Sonoma Valley called Landmark Vineyards. And what's really neat about this place is that you actually get to stay in the middle of a working vineyard. So they only have two rooms, and they're really more like suites. So one is great for families or friends. It can sleep up to four people. The other one has a fireplace, a little private patio, and, you know, you're right on site, so you don't need to worry about who's going to do the driving or, you know, how am I going to, you know, work out all these different vineyards and deal with the traffic. You can just kind of wander over to the tasting room right there on the property, hang out, and see, you know, what they're producing right there on the site.
Now, you've got one more on your list that I know about. Another little hidden one on the French Riviera, and it's called Les Deux Frères, the two brothers. Tell me about it.
Yeah, exactly. So that one is in, along the French Riviera. It's in a tiny town, and it's a 19th century stone building. It was once a school, so like a lot of the properties that we've chosen here, it really has a lot of personality, even to the building itself.
It's small, like 10 rooms, right?
Exactly. So it's small. So again, you know, in a destination that's really popular, but even the fact that you're staying at a place that only has 10 rooms already, that's kind of getting you away from the real crowded nature of the place. And depending on which room you're in, you might be looking out over the town square, or if you're really lucky, you'll get the whole view, the cliffs, the sea, and even Monaco out in the distance.
And wait a second, you forgot the best part of the deal, the price.
Yeah, exactly. Don't forget the price. It starts as low as $100.
That's not bad, because normally at that time, it's only closed like in November or December, but other than that, anytime you go to the French Riviera, $100 is the estimate price that you get for a Coca-Cola.
Yeah, exactly. Not exactly the first thing that comes to mind when you think budget travel, but that's what we're trying to do for people, you know, is really show them that they can stretch their dollars further than they might think.
Well, I love it. The name of the piece, of course, that we only got a couple, four or five of them, but there are nine at least here, the nine best secret hotels in the world. Well, they're not secret anymore. Check it out on budgettravel.com. And, of course, our guest, Kate Appleton. Kate, thanks so much.
Thanks. It was a pleasure.
You got it. I really appreciate that. So many other great hotels she's got in that list, including one in Mexico from $60 in the Riviera Maya. Not a bad deal at all. One in Sicily from $98. Even one in Costa Rica that... it'll hit you for a whopping $70. Not bad. Not bad at all. When we come back, right back here to the Dominican Republic with a little bit of history, a little bit of culture. You remember that, right? History and culture? We won't even charge for it. Back with more from the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Punta Cana, Dominican Republic, right after this.
The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now, so call us at 1-888-88-PETER. That's 1-888-887-3837. To participate in the program and speak with Peter Greenberg, call 1-888-887-3837 or visit petergreenberg.com. Now back to Peter Greenberg Worldwide.
52 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg here with you from the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Punta Cana in the Dominican Republic. Taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. If you can't get through on the phones, you know what to do. Email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem. We will solve it right here on the air. My next guest, a cultural guide, a teacher, an author, a legal resident in the Dominican Republic since 1997, which means the authorities still haven't found out yet. Just kidding. With the best possible name as a guest for coming to you from the Hard Rock Hotel, because her name is Lynn Guitar. I love it. How are you, Lynn?
Very good, Peter. Thank you. Excuse the reader's evening. Yeah, I get a lot of those strange comments because of the last name, but it's really mine.
Hey, I go with it. You got to own that. I love it. So most of the people, I'm going to be devil's advocate right off the top here. Most of the people who come to the Dominican Republic as tourists, they go to the resort, they never leave the resort, they're at the pool, they're drinking, and they go back to the airport, they get on the plane, they leave, and that is not what you're all about, is it?
Definitely not what I'm all about, and they miss some of the most incredibly wonderful parts of the Dominican Republic. I became fascinated by the Dominican Republic when I went back to school as a 42-year-old sophomore in 1989. This is the island that has the oldest permanent settlement, you know, in all of the Americas, and the island where all of the patterns that were taken to the Americas, especially to Spanish America, were formed. The patterns of how the cities were constructed and all the cultural patterns. It's an island just full of history, starting with Christopher Columbus when he landed here in 1492.
Yeah, everybody forgets about Christopher Columbus. That's Hispaniola, isn't it?
Hispaniola, yes. The island is Hispaniola. He baptized it that. We don't know what the original indigenous name was. It had several because there were at least 7 to 9 indigenous tribes and nations, and they each had their own different words for it. There's a controversy whether the Taino Indians, who were the most advanced of all the groups on the island, ever called it Kiskaya or not, but a lot of people believe that they did call it Kiskaya, but they also called it Aichi, and it seems to have had several other names, including Boio, which is a Taino word that means home.
Well, Lynn, it's interesting because you mentioned the Taino population. When Christopher Columbus came here, it's estimated there are 1 million of them, and now it's down to what, 500?
Well, nobody knows even how many there really were. You know, in 1492, the original Spaniards thought there were only like maybe 200,000. And every time we do more archaeological research and more demographic research and mitochondrial DNA research, we get different numbers. Probably we're somewhere around 4 million in the 1490s. But because it's tropical, the bacteria and viruses that came with the Spaniards and their animals wiped out probably 80, maybe even 90%. But 80 or 90% of 4 million is a lot. Today, there's nobody, you know, who still walks around wearing just armbands and leg bands and speaking Taino. So there are no pure Tainos left, so far as we know. But almost all Dominicans have some Taino DNA in their in their multiple genetic structure. They're basically tripartite, you know, indigenous peoples with African and European genes on top.
I think people forget, if you look at the history of this country, that at one point this country wasn't a country. It was all part of the Republic of Haiti until about 1822, right?
Well, no. It was actually two separate countries, if you will, or two separate colonies. There was a French colony that occupied the western one-third of the island and was called Saint-Domingue, and then the Spanish side, which was called then San Domingo, because the capital city was so predominant. In 1802 or 1803, in the late 1700s, the Haitian side, what we call the Republic of Haiti today, began to rebel. They wanted that liberty, freedom, and brotherhood that the French were getting in their French Revolution, and they rebelled. I think it's 1802 or 1803 that the Republic of Haiti.
Can I tell you what year it was? I'm going to help you. It was 1804. How do you like that?
1804. See, I'm close. I'm an historian, and I prefer stories about history to date.
Hey, you were close. You were close. But then, of course,
the Haitians took a while to get their act together. But when they did finally, Toussaint Louverture had been here already. He was here in 1801, and that's when he declared that there was no more slavery across the island. But then he got involved in a dispute with Henri Christophe and Dessalines over who was actually going to be the president of the new Republic of Haiti. Once they got their act settled, yes, in 1822, that's when the Haitians unified the island.
I gotcha. Lynn Guitar, a great history lesson for us tonight. A great history lesson for us at any time of the day. We really appreciate that. And, of course, that music means it's time for a lot of stations to leave us, a lot more stations to join us. We're out of time for this hour. But if you're sticking around, we got a whole lot more coming in the next hour from the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Punta Cana in the Dominican Republic. Back with more of Peter Greenberg Worldwide right after these messages. Thanks again, Lynn.
You've been listening to Peter Greenberg Worldwide. Visit our website at www.petergreenberg.com. Live from around the world, it's time for Peter Greenberg Worldwide with America's number one frontline travel news journalist. Get on the phone now and call 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. And now, the man who travels over 400,000 miles each year, the travel detective, Peter Greenberg.
And welcome aboard Peter Greenberg Worldwide. Hope you're having a wonderful fifth weekend in January, wherever you happen to be. If you're just joining us, well, we'll tell you where we are because we've been crisscrossing the country and avoiding as much weather as possible. We're at 18 degrees, 32 minutes north, 68 degrees, 22 minutes west. Yes, we've been living on planes, but we're coming to you now from the new Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Punta Cana in the Dominican Republic. Taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. If you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill. Email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem. We'll solve it right here on the air, and there are a lot of problems to solve. A couple of things in the news this week I want to talk about. One in particular, earlier in the show we were talking about a group called ECPAT. It stands for End Child Prostitution and Trafficking. It's the fastest growing crime in the world. It is the least prosecuted crime. We've been talking about this for a number of weeks on the show. There are UN protocols that people in the travel industry should follow so that they're not doing business with anybody who's involved in human trafficking. And we're not just talking about prostitution. We're talking about the 2011 version of slavery in the world. And a lot of this stuff is interconnected. Interesting news item that I'll share with you right now. Marriott is starting to phase out pornography in its new hotels. And you know what? Omni has also taken a porn-free position. Part of this has nothing to do with religious conviction or pressure groups. It has to do with the fact that, believe it or not, so much of the porn that you're seeing or may be seeing in hotel rooms is linked to trafficking. And that's just one aspect of who's picking the groceries or the vegetables that you're eating in your hotel restaurants, who's making the clothing, who's even making the uniforms that the people in the hotels are wearing. It is so widespread in terms of child labor, and I encourage everybody listening to this show to go to the website ECPAT, that's ECPAT.net, and learn as much as you can about the protocols that they're basically lobbying so many people to sign in the hotel and travel industry. Carlson Group has signed it, basically saying they will not do business with anybody involved in trafficking. They're going to vet it in terms of all their vendors. The French group Accor has done the same thing. We need more and more hotels to do it. And the cool thing is that Marriott and Omni, at least, are starting to take a stand, at least in the area of losing. And let's face it, they will be losing a lot of in-room revenue. People don't realize that one of the largest sources of in-room revenue from hotels is not just the minibar, it's pornographic movies. So something to be thinking about, and I just wanted to share it with you. We have a lot more about that on our website, petergreenberg.com. And speaking of our website, we're joined by our managing editor, Sarika Shawa. Hey, Sarika.
Hey, Peter.
So I know you just came back from one of your world-class experiences. You were actually judging something in Mendocino?
I was judging something. You know how people always say to you, "I wish I had your job"?
Yeah.
This is one of those times where I'm glad I have my job. Yeah, it was pretty exciting. It was the Mendocino Crab and Wine Festival. And
Hurt me.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, I'm highfalutin now.
I just want to say this. My goal in life is to be a judge at the Mendocino Crab and Wine. Oh, my God. Keep going.
I know. It doesn't get better than that. But I will say, I mean, there are the there's work involved because it's not just, you know, schmoozing around sipping wine. We were sat down at 9 a.m., and tasted 14 different crab cakes, followed by 40 different wines.
Oh, I'm feeling so sorry for you. Sympathy letters can be sent to Sarah Michelle. Oh, please.
So it worked out really well. And the wines themselves, that was interesting. It was all local wineries, and Mendocino is just like north of Napa, Sonoma. It's the north coast of California. It's actually one of the, I think it has the highest concentration of organic wineries in the country. So there was a great selection, and we had to pair that wine with local crab. Not crab cakes, but actually steamed crab. So there was a lot of crab and wine over the weekend. And the
okay, you can stop now.
No,
I'm not getting you any slack after this.
You're jealous.
Of course I'm jealous.
Yeah.
But now let's shift gears because our good pal Susie Gershwin, who wrote all the Born to Shop books and one of our regular contributors on the website, she's helping us out in both London and Manhattan, isn't she?
Yeah, now Susie is that woman where you say, I want that job. She is able to travel the world, literally, shopping, looking for the best places to shop. So she took it upon herself to head to London so that she could do some wedding preparations for Kate Middleton. Not that Kate asked her to, but, you know, it's Susie figured, why not? It's her job.
You know, I'm actually going to go to London because I'll be reporting on it. In fact, the radio show is going to be coming from there. And I'm promising all my friends, whether they like it or not, I'm bringing them back the ugliest commemorative plates, snow globes, I mean, all the crap that they're going to be selling. You know, the Brits do three things well, if you want to call it well. Weddings, funerals, and commemorative plates.
They have some good, the plates and also those, I had a pencil case when I was a kid that was in the shape of like a London double-decker bus. They do good
okay.
with tchotchkes, yeah. No,
yes, they did.
Yeah.
But you know what? What's great about Susie, though, is she's not just doing shopping about high-end. This is not Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous. Susie was the one who turned me on years ago to a store in Paris called Monoprix,
mm-hmm.
which is the coolest discount store right in the middle of Paris. And you can get some great things there without mortgaging your house. So I love Susie's books. They're all called Born to Shop, and you can read her every week on our website.
That's right. And she actually got some great deals in London as well. I mean, she found couple of bridal shops where they were having sales up to 75% off. So if you want to be your own, you know, princess bride, you can just follow her lead and figure out where to buy your next dress.
Okay, I won't be doing that particular trip.
You can pass on the tip.
And that's what we do. And that's what we do. Sarika Schaller, our managing editor, who is still overdosing from her 40 different crabs and wine. Okay, we're done with you. We are done with you.
I'm going back next year.
Goodbye. Thanks, Sarka. We really appreciate that. Hey, by the way, coming up on the show, a lot of your phone calls because we got so many people to take on the calls. And we're going to talk about style and design here in the Dominican Republic, things you didn't know about. Plus, interesting development in the airline business. They're coming up with even more ways to hose us for extra fees that you didn't even think about. And we're not talking about the pay toilets at Ryanair. We're not talking about the standing room only seats. We're talking about stupid stuff, like determining that a middle seat 3 feet away from first class is actually worth up to $39 more as a premium. Are they kidding me? You know what that means? All that means is if you sit in that seat and you're stupid enough to pay the $39, it even gets more insulting because you can smell the chocolate chip cookies in first class, but you still can't have one. You know, we have to redefine the word premium. Because right now, a middle seat 3 feet behind first class has nothing to do with premium. It has to do with pathetic. All right? Anytime you're stuck in the middle seat, it's pathetic to begin with, whether it's 35E or 9E. It's still E. Guys, get the alphabet together. E is not where you want to be. E is what happens when you get stuck between two sumo wrestlers and you're on the wrong flight. Why would you want to pay a premium for that? Ugh. Anyway, when we come back, more of your calls, and of course a lot more about the Hotel Hard Rock. That's right, the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Punta Cana in the Dominican Republic. Their newest hotel and the only Hard Rock in the Caribbean. Who knew? Back with more Peter Greenberg Worldwide right after this. And don't you ever get stuck in 9E and pay for it.
The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now, so call us at 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by
MedJet Assist. If you're injured or hospitalized while traveling, MedJet Assist will arrange medical transportation directly to the hospital of your choice. Travel safely and be smart. Get MedJet Assist. Take trips, not chances.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
18 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg here coming to you from the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino, brand new in Punta Cana in the Dominican Republic. Taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. And if you can't get through on the phones, you know what to do. Email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem. We'll solve it right here on the air. And as I do every week at this point of the show, I encourage you to go to our very imaginatively named website, petergreenberg.com for one very important reason. We have a comprehensive list there of all the aid and relief organizations doing all the hard work right next door to us here in Haiti and in Western China and in Chile and in the Gulf, where people need all that help. The rebuilding efforts in Haiti to be going on for at least the next 8 to 10 years. Earlier in the show, we learned from the Red Cross, still 800,000 people homeless there. They need our help. So check out our website. So many different opportunities for you to get involved, to be physically, actively on location involved in that relief effort. Okay, let's go to an email from Gwen in Savannah, Georgia. She said, I heard your radio show Saturday and your comment based on the current situation with the online travel agencies, people like Expedia and Orbitz that have been dropped by airlines such as American. And the airline fare displays that suggest that people call even if they have to be on hold for half an hour or so, I guess indicating that they should call the airlines. You mentioned things that the OTAs don't do, such as look for hidden cities, etc. You never mentioned the one entity that will go the extra mile in doing that, many travel agencies. Well, Gwen, then you weren't hearing the show. I said call a human being, and that involves travel agents. I'm a big fan of travel agents. I am not a big fan of bad travel agents, but I like the good ones who will go the extra mile, because you may have preferred supplier relationships and have access to inventory that the websites don't. I've said that from day one. The biggest myth out there is that all the inventory is on the Internet. It is not. That is a bold-faced lie. It's the inventory that the travel suppliers want to make available on the websites, and there are a lot of things, whether it's a hotel, an airline, a cruise ship, even a rental car company, that you will not find on the websites that local hotels, airlines, and cruise lines may have in their inventory that they haven't released. And so if you can go through a travel agent, great. If you can go through the airline, great. I'm not saying don't use the Internet. I'm just saying don't depend on it. It doesn't necessarily give you what you need. So just so you know. Let's go to the phones. We got Stephen on the phone in Queens, New York, digging out of snow. Hey, Stephen.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. How can I help you?
Yes, we'll be going to Cairo, Egypt. You have any suggestions for me, any do's and don'ts?
As opposed to Cairo, New Jersey? Absolutely.
Yep.
That was a joke, Stephen. Bear with me.
I know.
Okay. Well, here's the thing. If you've been reading the news lately, you know there have been some street protests in Cairo against the current regime, that regime being in power for the last 30 years. That's Hosni Mubarak. I wouldn't let that worry you. Americans are not being targeted. I just came back from Cairo last month. I was in both Cairo and Luxor. I love Cairo. I love the Egyptians. I don't have a problem. And if you're staying at the Marriott, you may not know this, but it's a former palace, and the public rooms there are exquisite. The casino is a lot of fun. It's on an island. I don't know if you know that. It's on an island right there in the Nile, but it's accessible to everything you want to do. One of the things I'd suggest that you do, if you really want to take a shot, and, you know, my philosophy, Stephen, is if it's in the brochure, I don't want to know about it. So I'm going to give you some stuff that's not in the brochure in Cairo. Are you ready?
Yes.
Good. Write this down. There's a really cool restaurant called Paprika, just like the herb, Paprika, P-A-P-R-I-K-A. They make the best rotisserie chicken you'll ever have, and go check them out. Any cab driver should be able to take you there, your hotel concierge. You don't need to eat at the Marriott. You didn't go there to have cheeseburgers. You went there to have Egyptian-style food. Get out of the hotel and go eat. The other thing you want to do is, speaking of restaurants, some of the best rice pudding you'll ever have in your life. If you're a freak of rice pudding like I am, you'll find after 11 o'clock at night at any bakery in Cairo, it's the best. Great bread and great rice pudding. And then don't follow the tour guides who tell you that you're going to go see the pyramids at noon. That's the worst thing you could do. You'll be stuck in a tour bus at noon. Your photographs will look ugly. They'll be washed out. You'll be thousands of people out there trying to buy postcards on camels. Why would you do that to yourself? Here's what I want you to do if you really want to be bold. And if you live in Queens, Stephen, then I know you're already bold. Here's what you're going to do. You're going to tell your hotel concierge at the Marriott that you want to go horseback riding at dawn. And you're going to leave your hotel at 4:45 in the morning. And your bride is going to thank you for this. Trust me. You're going to get out to Giza, which is about a 20-minute ride with no traffic. You'll get out to Giza about 5:15 in the morning if you leave at 4:45. They'll have the horses ready for you. You will mount up on the horses, and then you and your bride, and bring a lot of cameras, because you're going to be taking pictures on this one. You will be alone on your horseback right there as the dawn comes over the pyramids. You cannot beat that experience. And then go have breakfast at the Mena House, which is right there in Giza. And then, as you're finished, you'll see all the tour buses starting to come towards Giza with screaming people that you don't want to even know. And you have already had an experience that they will never have. You with me on that so far?
Absolutely.
And then, I'm not done yet, You want to go, of course, to the Khalil Bazaar, which is the in-house, the covered bazaar in Cairo. And in there, you'll find some great places, but I'm not going to recommend anybody in particular. But I will tell you that there's my favorite food in that bazaar, and my favorite food in Beirut, and my favorite food in Jordan is something called kanafi. I can't even explain it to you. It's like melted cheese and cornbread and honey. Just ask anybody when you get to the bazaar, where can I find some kanafi? And you will be one happy Stephen in Queens, okay?
Okay, thanks a lot.
You got it, Stephen. I really appreciate that. Oh, we've got somebody calling from your nearby neighborhood of Livingston, New Jersey. We got Judy on the phone. Hey, Judy.
Hey. Also, hi. Judy Greenberg, no relation.
You never know, but I'll take the Greenberg call. Go ahead. How can I help you?
Okay. I am 77 years old. I don't travel often, but when I do, it's only in the States. After a bad experience with my husband 2.5 years ago, I would like to buy MediJet insurance. However, they only go up to age 75, and I'm 77. It would be just for me.
Okay. Have you checked all the insurance companies?
Some of them have a diamond club, which is really exorbitant. It's $395 for the year.
That is not Judy, listen to me now. $395 for the year is nothing compared to what it will cost you if you don't have it, and I'll explain. We just talked to Stephen about Cairo. I was in Cairo a couple of years ago, and a gentleman about your age had tripped off a curb while he was visiting the Egyptian Museum in Cairo and broke his hip. He did not have medical evacuation insurance. They had to buy 5 first-class seats on the plane on a 747 to fly him back to the States, 4 to hold the stretcher between the 2 rows of seats, and the 5th for the nurse that had to go with him. His airfare costs alone were $46,000, and that didn't count medical equipment, supplies, and everything that had to be met with him when he landed in the U.S. An annual premium of under $400 is well worth it, and I will tell you this. I buy that insurance. There are a number of companies that sell it. Travel Guard does, MedJet. I happen to have the one from MedJet. I've had that card for over 12 years, and if there's any wood around here, listen. I'm knocking on it because I haven't had to use the card, but I'm very glad I still have it. So that's not an exorbitant cost when you realize what the alternative is if you need to be evacuated, okay?
I am aware of that because I had tried to get my husband evacuated when he was ill, and we just couldn't afford it. So that's why I'm at this point now. Now, you say MedJet, and what other company?
Travel Guard and MedJet are the two companies I think do a very, very good job, and they both offer that protection, and I'm telling you, it's an annualized premium, as you already know. It's well worth it, even if you never use it. It's peace of mind, right, Judy, from one Greenberg to another?
I hope I never use it. Is it possible to buy it for just one trip instead of for a year?
Not really. I don't think you can. But you know what? Even if it's for one trip and you don't use it for the next year, it's still worth it. Do the math, honey.
I know. I just wanted to investigate, and I figured you were the best one.
Well, you know what? No, I'm going to bust you. You know why? You know what? You're just looking for a deal.
No. You have to understand. I never traveled with this type of insurance before.
Right.
But I lost my husband after that trip.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
And I was able to get him home, and as soon as I got him home, he passed away.
I'm sorry.
So
but
that's
you know what?
I have this in the back of my mind. I have to go back to the place where we were when we were stuck for 5 months.
Now it's on my mind. Yep, you know what? It's more than on your mind. You got to do it. So please, do yourself a favor, and even in his memory, get that insurance. I'm telling you, even if you never use the card. Okay, Judy?
Thank you for your help, Peter.
Okay, Madam Greenberg. I'll talk to you later. I really appreciate the call. When we come back, style over substance and the brave new world of hotel design. What works and what doesn't from the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Punta Cana in the Dominican Republic. Back with more of Peter Greenberg Worldwide right after this.
To participate in the program and speak with Peter Greenberg, call 1-888-887-3837 or visit petergreenberg.com. The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now. So call us at 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. Once again, here's your host, Peter Greenberg.
33 minutes after the hour, coming to you from the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Punta Cana in the Dominican Republic. You heard me say it before, style versus substance, what works, what doesn't work. And I'm one of those people who believes, even before I introduce my next guest, because I want to challenge them with this, I believe that any hotel designer should have to spend at least 3 nights in that hotel they design before they're paid for their work, just to see if it works. Because for me, I'm more of a substance guy than a style guy, unless the style actually has substance. Meaning, I've walked into some hotels, and I walked into the bathroom, which I judge the hotel first on the bathroom. And if the bathroom works, then the rest of the hotel works. I walk into some of those bathrooms, and I go, that's a what? Oh, that's a sink. Oh, I could get hurt. You know, I mean, I don't want to sit on that. Oh, that's the toilet? I mean, I need assistance. I mean, every once in a while, you know what, go back to the basics and go to the fundamentals. But every once in a while, you can do cutting-edge design that's also got substance, and then you've hit the home run. And joining me now, James Geyer, the president and founder of 555, and Karen Harold, who's his VP of design. You guys did a lot of the work here at the Hard Rock in the public rooms, as well as what you would call the Rockstar Suites. Based on your history of design and trying to figure out what works in terms of a theme, you heard what I just said in the introduction in terms of the challenge of style versus substance. Which one is winning here?
Both.
Oh.
Easy answer. You're exactly right. And we spend a lot of time in hotels and traveling, and we don't have to then be in a hotel for 3 days before we get paid.
Well, that's in your contract.
That is in the contract. Exactly.
I guess my question is this. You heard me say what I think about the bathroom. There's another area. There are two things that get me nuts. The bathroom, and most of the women that I talk to, it's what gets them nuts, because there's either not enough light in there for their makeup or there's not enough shelf space. Excuse me, Karen, for all the crap you carry with you.
True.
It's just the bottom line, right?
Yeah.
But then the other thing is the rest of the room itself. It's called the light. Every hotel designer wants to trap me with mood lighting, and it puts me in a very bad mood. Because I don't change my lifestyle when I change my location. I want the option of being able to, it's a four-letter word, starts with an R, ends with a D, read,
Think.
That's a five-letter word. But, you know, I can't, give me a 300-watt bulb with a dimmer. Don't give me a 40-watt bulb with an on-off switch. Does that make any sense?
Yeah. Makes a lot of sense. I mean, the function and form, it goes hand in hand. And we talk about that all the time. And, you know, creating an ambient in the mood, but also being practical about what your client really needs.
And yet here we are at a resort. People are expected to come and have a great time. They want a little bit cutting edge. They want a little bit over the top. So what have you done that's different here?
Quite a bit, I'd say. At the beach. And that's kind of the equation that we put on it. And the environments that are being developed for Hard Rock and kind of pushing them to bring it to the beach, the Sun Lounge and the Moon Bar and the Eclipse Terrace, taking the vibrancy of what we do in more urban environments and, you know, how nice and with it they might be as far as clubs in those environments, but bringing it to the beach and making it casual and making it relate and not look standoffish in any way. We spend an awful lot of time in contemplating the elements that have to go into the spaces. And
so you're contemplating at the beach. At the beach.
Yeah. At the beach. Well, at the beach is what you have to put at the tagline.
Where's James? Always contemplating at
the beach.
Yeah.
It's a good place to work.
Yeah.
But we have to spend a lot of time doing that because a lot of the work we do is in more urban environments. And this is a...
It's a departure for you.
Yeah. Well, I think with this one specifically, it was a palace hotel, and we were asked by Hard Rock to put a Hard Rock layer over that. It was
a Hard Rock imprint,
hotel.
If you will.
Yes, exactly.
So that was a different challenge that we
normally
have.
Okay,
call it tattoo on a pig.
Okay.
How do you make that good look good?
Okay.
Well, I said we.
I know, right. And does the pig fly?
Pig flies.
Okay, that's all I want to know. If the pig flies and it's got a tattoo, we're in.
That's it. We're good.
What's the most unusual, cutting-edge thing you've done design-wise in this hotel?
Moon.
Moon bar, yeah, moon. Definitely.
What we tried to do with Moon is we felt when we came here there wasn't enough activity in a lot of the spaces, we felt, and there wasn't enough difference between each of the night venues. So we tried to take each space and give it a very clear identity, and Moon being focused on a nightlife venue and more clubby environment, there we really put the LEDs in the ceiling, put a lot of effort in lighting, a lot of effort in over-the-top furniture. There's like a 30-foot sofa in there, and a wall that's completely made out of speakers. So definitely put like the music.
Well, music-centric. Everything in Hard Rock's world applies that. We built chandeliers using patch cables, RF cables from guitars and amps and microphones. And we design and build custom elements that, you know, really exude the level of what the customer's all about. And in this case, obviously, Hard Rock. As Karen
said. Even the suites. I mean, we have a huge jelly tank in the room.
Jellyfish.
It was a jellyfish tank as opposed to a jelly tank. Hello?
That's a good one for next time.
we approach things, we do a lot of work in urban environments, and we design and build clubs and restaurants.
And in this particular case, you actually tattooed the pig.
You got it.
All right. James Geyer and Karen Harrell, thanks for joining us. We really appreciate that. And I'm going to come back. Now that you've done it, I'm looking for the jelly tank from now on.
Go for the jellies.
Oh, God. We'll be back, if I still have a career, right after this.
There you go. Thank you.
Now to talk to Peter Greenberg at 1-888-887-3837 or email him at peter@petergreenberg.com. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by
Travel Guard Insurance. For travel insurance plans for the unexpected, see your travel agent or visit TravelGuard.com for affordable travel insurance protection from Travel Guard.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
43 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg here with you from the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Punta Cana in the Dominican Republic. You know, every time I go someplace, I want to ask the locals, somebody who knows what they're talking about. I'm still the visitor in many cases, and I've got a perfect candidate for that job right now, Raul Baz, who's a journalist for Revista Mercado, based in Santo Domingo, but visiting right now, as I am, in Punta Cana. You've been here, you're Mexican, but you've been in the Dominican Republic for 5 years.
Indeed. First of all, thank you for the opportunity of being here on your show.
Oh, no problem.
And, I've been here for, let's say, 5 years in the Dominican Republic.
Okay, we'll say that.
We could say that.
Okay, what brought you here?
Well, work mostly, and then after that, I got married here, and I saw certain opportunities in tourism industry, consultancy, and a lot of things that brought me to the country. I really got involved with the people. I like the lifestyle in the Dominican Republic.
And for people who've never been here before, I mean, I landed at the airport today. Every time I come to Punta Cana, there are like 9 planes lined up at the taxiway there, many of which most Americans have never seen their logos on those tails. They're coming in from Europe. They're coming in from Canada. They're coming in from all over the world because they've discovered this is a great destination for travel.
It's really amazing. I mean, even though Punta Cana isn't the capital of the Dominican Republic, it's Santo Domingo, there's more international flights coming into Punta Cana that there is Santo Domingo.
And most people would never even know that.
I mean, there's a lot of people in Europe that actually will never get together Santo Domingo and Punta Cana. They just think it's two different things. And they're in the same small little half island.
Okay, so here we are on this little small little half island here. What's special about Punta Cana that you love?
Well, it's being created 100% for tourism. I mean, if you see other places in the world, they just begun with their tourism industry out of something else. Punta Cana was created from scratch with the ideal of making it a tourism destiny. So infrastructure is being built the right way. Hotels are being built in the right places. People are being trained. So it's really destined to be a tourism paradise.
Now, with that comes a responsibility to keep it sustainable, to keep it basically clean, to keep it not developed to the point of just becoming crazy.
And they're doing a fairly good job on it. I mean, the past probably 5 years, There's been a huge boom on infrastructure. They're building a new highway that's going to connect La Romana to Punta Cana in 70 kilometers. That's probably going to be 40-minute drive.
Well, that infrastructure, I get. I'm talking about, you know, the environment mm-hmm. itself. I mean, a highway just means more cars to me.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But the people here, the owners of the hotel and the large international chains, like, for example, Hard Rock, I mean, big brands are really conscious about taking care of the environment. The local Dominican companies that are building infrastructure or even building big developments are taking good care of the environment. They're really doing something even with the people. They're training them very tourist-wise so they can attend any person that comes here.
Where do you like to hang out?
Well, you mean in Punta Cana?
Yeah.
The hotels here are really big. They have everything. So you can arrive to, for example, the Hard Rock Hotel. You can arrive, and you don't have to leave the hotel because you have everything.
Right, so, but I'm one of those guys who likes to leave the hotel.
Bávaro, for example. That's a small little town, the closest town from here. There's a lot of restaurants, small little bars. But also, there is the opportunity to go to other places, not just Punta Cana. There's a whole lot of experiences in the Dominican Republic. For example, Samaná up north, the small little peninsula. In the north, there's also Jarabacoa. That's mountain. There's no beach there. So it's a different type of tourism. It's not only just beach and the typical sun.
But you won't see a lot of group tourism up there. You just got to know it's got to be there. You just got to know it's there.
Exactly.
And when you go to the small towns, like the one next door to us, Bávaro, right?
Bávaro, yeah.
Yeah. What am I going to find there?
There's a lot of small restaurants. There's been a lot of Europeans that have come to live to the Dominican Republic, and they just put little restaurants or small bars. It's really growing a lot. These past two or three years have been really successful, also taking into consideration that there's very big developments. For example, Punta Cana, for example, Cap Cana. So they attract a lot of people, not only to come and visit, but also to live. So Bávaro has grown to be a tourist city, but also to offer things to local people that do live here.
And when we come back, I want to talk to you about the local stuff that you can even eat there, that, you know, favorite dishes that you have, mm-hmm. stuff to order that may not be on the menu. Will you stay with me for that?
Sure.
Okay, we like that idea, because I'm not going to let you leave. How about
okay.
that?
Okay, all right. I'm right here.
Good. When we come back, more with Raul Baez from the Revista Mercado. And I'm Pedro Greenberg saying we'll be back with more of Peter Greenberg Worldwide right after this. Ay, listo.
The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now, so call us at 1-888-88-PETER. That's 1-888-887-3837. To participate in the program and speak with Peter Greenberg, call 1-888-887-3837 or visit petergreenberg.com. Now back to Peter Greenberg Worldwide.
52 minutes after the hour, we've been talking to Raul Baez from the Revista Mercado here in Punta Cana. Of course, he's based in Santo Domingo, but he's gracing us with his presence. We're just talking about the really cool places and the really cool dishes you can order in these little small towns.
Well, the good thing about the Dominican Republic is that they like to keep it simple. And the best food is the one that's simple. For example, moro. You get that. That's rice and beans. But it's made really special. It's not just the typical rice and beans. I mean, it's mixed together, and it's something.
And this is spoken as a true Mexican here.
Yeah, I mean, and it's really good. I would say it's part of the national food here. It's something that everybody eats. Everybody.
So moro and a little beer, you're in.
Exactly. Some beer, that's also a must. And the other dish, I would say, a little bit more complex, it's called sancocho. Sancocho is like a stew. It has vegetables. It has chicken.
You know what? It's got everything in there. They throw everything in that thing.
You know what I'm talking
about.
I've
had it, yes.
You know what I'm talking
about.
I
am, yeah.
And it's really, fantastic. And any tourist that comes to the Dominican Republic, I mean, lobster is...
You're not going to find that on the dishes in the hotels. You got to go outside to find it.
You got to go outside. You definitely got to go outside. And it's something, I mean, lobsters, shrimp, I mean, there's basically the same every single part of the world. Probably the size, but
I got
doesn't change. But Sancocho and Moro is definitely a must when somebody comes to the Dominican Republic.
All right, Raul Baz from the Revista Mercado, thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much.
And joining us on the phone right now, one of our great intrepid travelers who's got the best title for this. She's the Vice President for Global Travel and Strategic Development for American Express Publishing. She calls in from all over the world today. She's on the border of the United Arab Emirates and Oman, Michaela Guzzi. Hey, Michaela.
Hi, Peter. How are you?
Well, you know, most of my friends and most of your friends are probably saying, what are you doing over there? Most Americans are so fearful about traveling, and you're just bold, you go. What are you doing over there?
Well, I spent a week on business in Dubai, Abu Dhabi, and Qatar, and I just came with two of my girlfriends for a long weekend at Ziggy Bay, Six Senses in Oman.
You see, only you would do a girlfriend getaway in Oman.
I have to say, it's been pretty spectacular in the 6 hours I've been here.
Well, let me ask you this. So as a woman traveler, and I'm sure you ask this all the time, especially a woman traveler in that part of the world, do you have any fear, any concerns, any worries, or are you just rolling with it?
You know, I have to say, the UAE being Dubai and Abu Dhabi and even Doha are very international. You feel very safe, especially as a woman. I've never felt anything negative or uncomfortable. Yes, there are different standards in the way that people approach women from a local perspective here than in the U.S. particularly, but really nothing unsafe. However, since I've been here the past few days, there's definitely been breakouts of protests in Cairo, in Egypt, and there's certainly plenty going on in Lebanon. So there's definitely been talks of that, but it's very unrelated to what's going on in the UAE itself.
Oh, but here's you beg the next question. If I said to you right now, get on a plane and go to Cairo, would you go? I would go.
I have to say, maybe being somewhat foolish, I normally would, but I was sitting with our old friend Nigel Page of Emirates just yesterday, and he handled it like an old pro in the middle of our cup of coffee, catching up after a long time. He received three phone calls about the protests that were happening. And, I have to say he was very calm, handled it very well. But, I mean, it is all over the news. I don't know what you're seeing over there, but there is a lot going on in Cairo right now. And I know personally we actually asked a writer to hold back and maybe check it out at a later date.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, because I'm one of those guys who believes that the best time to go to Thailand was during the protest there, because if you get out a map and take a look at where it was concentrated on, it was maybe like four square city blocks, but it was a great visual when you saw one building on fire. And as long as Americans aren't being targeted, I'm going to go.
Well, you are a little bit of an extremist, I'm not going to lie. But I have to say, I was in Beirut last year for the 5th anniversary of Hariri's assassination, and I have to say it was the most peaceful protest I've ever seen. I'm pretty convinced the whole of Lebanon was on its way down to Beirut, and there was tanks and machine guns. But I never for once felt unsafe, and my girlfriends and I were over there jumping out of the car, taking photos, and we had a fantastic time, lots of dancing, eating, and spa treatments. So I never
felt unsafe. Let me see if I get this straight. Dancing, eating, spa treatments, and tanks.
Oh, and we also went and saw a few ruins to round out the cultural aspect.
You know what? Please do me a favor. Can I go on one of your girlfriend getaways? It sounds much, much more fun than what I'm doing.
Absolutely.
Okay, you said it. You let me go once. Great. Well, you know what? Once is better than not at all. So I will do that. Michaela Guzzi from American Express Publishing in the middle of the border of UAE and Oman. Having a great time. Another girlfriend getaway. A lesson to be learned there for those of you who are too fearful to travel. She's there. You're not. That music means we're out of time for the show this week. Got to thank Richard Rudman, our engineer, doing the work here. Jeff Ryder doing the boards back east in Connecticut. Chrissy McIntyre, our producer here. Shelley Goncharowski, our producer in Seattle. All the guys here at the Hard Rock Hotel in Punta Cana. We'll see you next week, everybody. Have a great week.
You've been listening to Peter Greenberg Worldwide. Visit our website at www.petergreenberg.com.